15 to 20 million.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM on the radio, which serves southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And on the internet, you can tune in from anywhere in the world simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you receive the email announcement today, send it off to a family member or friend, because as I go in my travels, I hear that people do that, and I'm really pleased that this is happening, because this is how our family continues to grow. As I said many times in the past, we have people that listen in only to a jazz station, only to a rock station, to talk stations, and then we have the great supporters that tune in to American Workers Radio. First, I want to say thank you to our faithful panel members, Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, who is on the road today, Larkin Connolly, national small business advocate, who is with us today, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. He will be with us a little later on in the show. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm in the studio with Shane Maziash. And also, I want to say a thank you to Bruce last week. And it was a very interesting broadcast because we talked about common sense issues. I also had the opportunity to speak with Curtis Ellis, the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance. And you know, he's a part of the Trump administration, and he's out promoting the America First project today, but ask that I give his best wishes to all of you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say that I saw something very different this Independence Day, because I saw that people were focusing on better times in America. Naturally, everybody was focused also on the parades and the fireworks and ways to enjoy America's celebration of our 242nd birthday. However, people are really a little more cheered up these days about the situation in America. And I really feel we need to keep the spirit of the 4th of July, where people are walking around with flags and shirts that have flags on it. Keep the spirit of the 4th of July, America's Independence Day, going on throughout the year. And by the way, we also had the opportunity in our travels to see many homes and businesses displaying the American flag. Boy, if that isn't beautiful to see. I wish we could have that throughout the warm weather in this eastern coast area, because it really makes people get to the point of, hey, I have to support America. I have to go out and support our local stores. People visiting historic Philadelphia were in a great mood. It was a very hot day in Philadelphia on the 4th of July, just like it was 242 years ago when our founding father signed the Declaration of Independence, footsteps away from the cultural center where our broadcast is. And by the way, people visiting the cultural center say that they want the country, Larkin, to where they live, to grow and get people working and respecting the ideals America was founded upon. Boy, that is the way it is. There's so much nonsense going on, whether you turn on your car radio, the news media, the evening news, there is just a focus on so much negativity. Well, guess what? People are tired of it. They say, I have now got to the point where I tune into very little news, especially these programs that are an hour long that give you 99% negative news. I don't want it anymore. And by the way, Larkin, your photo is again on hundreds of flyers, because throughout this holiday, I gave out tremendous amounts of flyers to the people. And so that's another way that I'm trying to promote the program. Larkin, tell me what's happening in your end of the world.
Good morning, Michael, and I hope all of our listeners had a wonderful 4th of July. St. Augustine, which Henry was amazed to find out from his grandfather just recently, is the oldest city in America. So I'm going to suggest that our fireworks displays are the oldest. They call it the ancient city. It's a beautiful town, and we had a great, great 4th of July celebration. And it's nothing makes the 4th more fun than small grandchildren, 5 and 3, who don't remember fireworks last year but sure do enjoy them this year. So we had all that, but I want to add something, Michael, that I think is pretty important. My number one news story this past week, and as far as I'm concerned, just about my number one news story so far this year, was the rescue of those 12 soccer players and their coach. The whole world pulled together, and it was a very, very positive event where one army guy from the area lost his life, but other than that, they pulled together with divers and experts from all over the world and got those 12 boys out of that cave along with their coach. The whole world was pulling for them, and it was positive all the way around. It was just positive news, and it was so much fun to watch.
It was, Larkin. It was, and that what you're saying is exactly what the people were talking about on the 4th of July. You know, we get a tremendous amount of visitors from all over the world to historic Philadelphia. And, of course, they talk about their economy in their country, our economy in America, how things are so well done in America. They don't understand, you know, they don't have the time because they're visiting to watch a lot of the negative news. But they are saying the same thing. Wouldn't the world be a better place if we could all be manufacturing things, trading with things with our friends in America and in China and in Japan? Everybody working together. We supply something, you supply something. Instead of all this nonsense that's been going on for at least 30 years. For at least 30 years. And you know, Larkin, anybody who knows me, anyone who listens on the broadcast, especially listen to my Saturday broadcast, it was back in 1999. I made a statement on the radio broadcast, and I said, we better take a close look at the millions of jobs that Americans are losing as a result of industries moving around the world. And instead of expanding industries in America, we watched them walk out the door, and the national leaders said nothing. But of course, the American people also said nothing, which brought us to the dilemma we find ourselves today. And in fact, Larkin and Shane and Henry and everyone listening, back in 1999, it was never my idea to make statements against Democrats or Republicans. I was simply stating a message, because I work in human services, seeing that people were out of a job. And I was telling people to stop, look, and listen to what was happening about them, and to see what's happening. You see someone being unemployed. You see your boys and girls in the family graduating, and they really don't have anything other than a certificate. They are not coming out with some trade. If they were more trade-minded, the people in the school system, the people in the government just pushed anything they wanted on the American children, and now we have many industries wanting to come back to America, and they simply are crying every day they don't have enough qualified people. And here I am, 19 years later, and my message is the same, and the people are saying, Michael, you never gave up on the message. I said, yes, but the politicians didn't take the lead. The news media didn't take the lead. The people in the various communities said, well, this is the way it is. It's the global economy. We're going to be a service-oriented economy. Larkin, have you seen that come true?
Well, yeah, and I don't think there's any question. You know, there's if you were to form a list of people that were guilty for the circumstance that we were in now, I would suggest to you that that you reverse that and make a list of the people who weren't responsible for it. It would be a much shorter list: Democrats, Republicans, Green Party, the deep state. Governors, they all sold a bill of goods to America saying you'll be much happier because what we bring from overseas is going to be cheaper. And you'll, you know, that was the sell. That's what everybody was told. Everybody loved Walmart. I mean, Walmart didn't start 50 years ago and grow into the size that they are by making quality goods made in America. That's not how they became the biggest corporation in the world. And so everybody's guilty. There were only a few of us, as we all go back to the beginning of this program, only a few of us that were saying that we're going down a very, very hairy road that we really need to be careful with, and nobody listened.
You're right.
Middle America enjoyed lower prices. That's what they did. They really did. They didn't care about quality because they certainly weren't getting any quality in what they were buying. And so the list of people responsible for the position that we're in right now is a hell of a lot longer than the list of people who were responsible.
You know, Larkin, as I talk to the people, too, and I love talking with them, is I'm seeing that poverty in some of the countries has gone down. Whereas in America, we still have huge tens of millions of people living in poverty and no possibilities of them getting into a job, a skilled job program, or getting a job where it's going to require skills. And I see also, and I hate to say it like this, but I also see that many of the bureaucrats want to continue this position so that they can keep their jobs. In other words, as people like Sherman McLeod get people out of poverty with his programs, this is going to hurt the bureaucrats who wanted to keep these people in poverty so they keep their job.
Right. You're right on. It's a really, really sad state of affairs. You know, it goes back to all of this concern about the southern border and separating kids from parents who are being held because they're trying to get into the country illegally, or at least they're trying to verify the facts. All of this is being said, but not one politician who gets in front of the camera has said anything about the 28% of American children under the age of 10 that go to bed hungry every day.
Right, right. And that is what I don't understand about any of the politicians. Two of them, by the way, in the last month, told me that my concerns about letting people into the country are not correct. I said, well, okay, then correct them for me. And they said, well, Michael, America depends on immigrants. And I said, you're right. America is benefited by immigrants for centuries. However, when you have the amount of people in poverty that we have in America, how can you bring in more people to your house? I said, John, do it like this. If you had five people in your house and your income was able to only handle five people, would you bring another five people in? How would you be able to feed them? How would you be able to pay their insurance? I said, that's the way you have to look at it. Not the fact that these new immigrants are going to be replacing the people that are dying. This is what we have, our own people want to have children and move on in life with a quality job that they can have because they have a great service to offer an employer or be self-employed. But they don't want to hear it. These politicians are very, very angry that we continue to promote the fact that America is the great nation of the world, but we don't want to let anybody walk in the door. I think it's, you know, in Europe, when I've been to Europe on many occasions, with the borders and without the borders, at the border, they still want to know who you are. They still want to know who you are.
Yeah, it's It's complete insanity is what it is. People that Washington, D.C., let's just leave it that way, the Congress, politicians who have not impressed me at all in the last 3 or 4 years of their handling of some of the problems and issues that we have. It's all politics now. It's, I hate Republicans. No, I'm a Republican. I hate Democrats. And it becomes an issue where they fight each other. And the funny thing I saw, this really was hysterical. There were people on the steps of the Supreme Court ready to demonstrate when Trump named his candidate for Supreme Court at 9 o'clock.
They didn't even know who it was. That's the sad part of it.
They had no idea who he could have named a liberal. It wouldn't have made any difference. They had signs printed for the top four candidates. And the hysterical part was they started to demonstrate, and as the camera panned these group, a handful, more than a handful of people had the wrong name on the placard. They didn't care. All they wanted to do was demonstrate.
When you go out to demonstrate in some places, they give you a little financial reimbursement. They also give food and water. And, you know, some of these kids like that. That's sort of a form of recreation to them. I saw that in New York, too. They had the signs without any name of the justice, but we cannot allow Trump to get his justice, you know, approved. We don't even know who it is. 8:30 at night, they were already, he didn't make the announcement until 9 o'clock, and at 8:30 they were there by 1,000 people ready to protest, walk down Fifth Avenue. It's insanity. It's a business. This, by the way, is a new business, getting people out to protest. If you ask those protesters, quite frankly, what exactly is the benefit of the particular candidate you're trying to vote against or urge the Senate to vote against, they would have very little knowledge about it.
I will guarantee you that if you interviewed that crowd, you couldn't get 25% of them to be able to tell you the process for getting a new Supreme Court judge. They have absolutely no idea, none whatsoever. I watch the late night guys who I don't watch much anymore because they've gotten rid of all of their writers and all they do is talk about Trump all the time. Absolutely no talent evident in that rigmarole. But you know it amazes me. They ask people on the beach at Santa Monica, why do we celebrate the 4th of July? Why? What are we celebrating? And nobody knew the answer until the end. But, I mean, nobody literally knew the answer. One girl, the first girl said, it's celebrating the end of the Civil War.
Yeah, I saw that, Larkin.
Celebrating the end of the Civil War. I went, yeah, maybe it should be.
And, you know, but the thing that I liked always when Jesse Waters would go out on these various, skits to go out and talk to people, ask them different countries, you know, where this country is and where this city is. They were 10 miles from the city he was asking about, and they had no idea that it was in the same place. Talking about, he was down in Florida for, spring break. And he did some, and there was another girl went around asking, this is Waters and this is my world. But she was going down asking about who was the vice president of the United States right now. And I want to tell you something, very few of the, when they looked, one person even was astonished that there was a vice president. What do you mean a vice president? I thought that Trump was the president. Well, is there a second? I don't think so. Trump would not allow it. I thought it was great.
Oh, my Lord. It's what my wife so aptly refers to all the time as the dumbing of America. I mean, How much dumber can you possibly get? And what happened to history class in school?
Well, I'm going to ask someone who's sitting in your chair, by the way, Larkin. I'm going to ask him, Shane Maziash, tell us a little bit about how much you learned about the 4th of July when you were in school.
Well, honestly, I don't even remember. A lot of the stuff I know about is probably from just research I've done on my own or stuff that my parents have told me or my grandparents and stuff like that. I can't tell you specifically learning about the 4th of July. Like, I'm sure we've talked about Independence Day at some point. I hope I don't know too many people that would think it was the end of the Civil War, because those are people I probably wouldn't want to associate myself with. But I will tell you, history is one of the subjects in high school that is becoming less and less liked. A lot of people think it's boring, which, I mean, I'm a history major. I love history. So even classes that, even though you have to take a history class, I know a lot of people will tune out. They won't pay attention. So, yeah, I don't know. And a lot of the stuff you learned in high school, I mean, we hear people say it all the time, stuff I wish I knew back then. A lot of the stuff you learn in high school history-wise is not what you end up learning in college. You learn a lot more facts. You know what I mean? I feel like opinions are often thrown in there, and that can affect the learning of everyone involved.
You know, guys, I want to tell you this, that talking with some of the foreign visitors, their history classes in schools are really in depth. They know a lot about America. They know when the Berlin Wall fell. They know everything. If you ask, if they don't know where the city of St. Augustine is, then they're not going to know about the Berlin Wall. That's the big thing.
Michael, I think another problem, like with high school, like history classes and just classes in general, is that these teachers are teaching to a lot of the kids that obviously don't want to be there. They have to keep them engaged. So a lot of the times just talking about facts and all that stuff is not going to work. You get judged and based. Your job is pretty much on the line for how well the students do and pretty much if they like you. So if you're teaching a class where no one knows about history, so they're getting bad grades and they think you're boring, your job might be on the line. So I feel like that might affect part of the curriculum that is.
And I agree with that. I agree with that. However, the point is this should all be taught in third grade through eighth grade. By the time you hit high school, you should already be discussing your thoughts on any particular subject. But that's not the way it is. I see it myself here, walking the historic district, that sometimes the people are walking. You see the parents are walking, listening to the guides, and you see the kids totally tuned out. They're sitting on their phones, texting, playing video games and all. They're not interested. Well, that interest has to come from somewhere. I see that their parents are interested because they are listening to the guide. How did it get to the point where the children have no interest? Is that something that should be promoted in school so that the kids at least have a foundation? You should know the history of the country where you live.
Agreed. And unfortunately, if we had the answer to those questions, we wouldn't really be talking about this right now. But like I said, we don't really know how to correct the problem because it is still a problem. But yeah, Larkin, I am ashamed to say that, well, to hear you say that someone thought the 4th of July, our Independence Day, was the end of the Civil War. That honestly was a little damaging to hear.
Yeah.
It's stunning. And the problem I have with it is college history. I was a history major, so you are earning your position in that chair. It's a brilliant major. Only smart people study history. I don't know that they know how to teach history anymore. You know, in college, I certainly, unfortunately, knew the political bent of every history teacher I had. Of course, there were only seven in the department. So as a major, I had them all at one point or another. And I could tell you how each one of them had voted in the last election. So we're not talking about what made the country or what created the current circumstance in this country. We're talking about right and wrong. We're teaching politics instead of history. And that's happening in colleges all over the country. And the liberal bent that has been laid on colleges in America is very fair. It's not unfair. There are very few teachers out there that are teaching facts and argue facts and discuss facts. They're teaching opinions.
I agree. And it's one of those things where I do have some teachers that say this. They're going to present the students with the facts and allow the students to form their opinions based on the facts that are given to them. But that's not the majority. That's an outlier. There's the majority of teachers, like you said, whether they knowingly do it or not, I'm not sure. But they will present facts, but in those facts are also some of their opinions. And someone who knows a lot about history, like myself, is able to identify when those opinions are being pushed onto us. But I obviously know a lot of people that aren't history majors that are taking a history class might not know that those are opinions, and they will take them as facts. So right. You're shaping these people around the ideas that you have instead of allowing them to be their own person, their own student, and form their own opinions.
Well said. Well said. Larkin, we were talking earlier about how all the news is now focused on Trump. It's a fact. And by the way, all the tourists are now focused on Trump. I try not to ask people one way or the other. I say, how's everything with you? And the economy's better. I'm doing better. That's why I'm here on a vacation. I'm not concerned that my business is going to leak, fold up, and leave. I see that we've gained a few people, new extra employees. I'm happy with the economy. So I don't like to push any opinion on the tourists, but it shows me that people are not going to vote as easily as they did because they're in a particular party. People are now going to vote for the person who has the most to offer. And that's going to happen on the local level, the national level, the state level. The old days of just having everybody babble you to death through the election season. Election day comes and you just run out and vote your party line. I think that's coming to an end.
Well, Trump is obviously a polarizing person. I mean, you either love him or you hate him. And one of the things that I don't understand, and we mentioned it earlier, Larkin, you mentioned it, and also you, Michael, everywhere you turn, there's always something about Trump. And the thing I don't understand, and I know I've mentioned it before, and I'm going to keep mentioning it until someone can give me a reason why. Why, how I work, if I don't like something, I'm not obsessed with it. These people are obsessed with Donald Trump, not because they like him, they hate him. They hate him so much that they can't get enough news about him. They're always talking about him. It does not make sense to me. If I did not like something, I would not be obsessed to it to the point where everything I do somehow gets back to that person or that thing. It blows
They're consumed with it. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's insane. I know.
You're giving him more power. If you don't like him, you're giving him more power by constantly talking about him. It's kind of counterproductive to your point. It doesn't.
Now, Larkin, I'm going to ask you a question. Seeing the news, and I know that you're a news junkie, seeing the news these days, are you encouraged or discouraged by what you hear about President Trump?
Well, I think it's discouraging. I think that his opposition party and some of the people in his own party, I mean, the guy got elected president. I they can't prove anything about the Russians, and they certainly can't prove any collusion.
They're trying like hell.
Between Trump and the Russians, sure, they're trying like hell, and they'll try until he steps away from us. And it's these kids, these demonstrators, have been taught to think this way.
Yes, you know, you're right, Larkin. But do you? I want to ask you this. Do you think that there should be a four-month or a six-month timeline, a report or something, that should be able to come out? Well, our first 4 months, we've learned this, which brings us to additional concerns. It doesn't seem to be like this. These people just go on and on and on. It's like they're not able to get a good night's sleep and wake up and see the sun again or something. Something's not right with these people.
Well, you know, I can tell you that in the press rooms across the country, if Donald Trump were to step up and say, I've developed a health issue and I have to step down, they'd pick up the ball and do the same thing to Pence. I mean, it's a new way of politics. It's a visceral way of finding everything possibly wrong. I mean, the comments I hear about the relationship between Melania Trump and her husband, how do they know that? Are they familiar with his bedroom or something? I mean, what they find and the things that that's all they are. They're on this witch hunt to find more bad facts about Trump.
They're preying on his downfall. That's pretty much what it's...
Well said. Preying on his downfall. Well said. Yes.
And that's the way they're taught to react politically.
But as our president, like, whether you like him or not, don't you want him to do well? Because if he does well, we all do well. Like, I don't understand. Like, you don't have to like the guy. You don't even have to support him technically. But, like, people that wish him, like, ill will and all this stuff, I just does not make sense to me. He's still the president, whether you like it or not. Whether you like him as a person or not, once again, he's still the president. If he goes down the toilet as a president, then I mean, our economy does, our country does. So can someone please get me some answers?
Well, I will tell you this. One thing that I learned from the people, especially in the 4th of July celebrations, Larkin, you're going to love this. The American people and everyone that I know, after watching Donald Trump, and whether he was a Democrat or a Republican, it wouldn't matter. Watching him as the person in charge, they see that everybody in America wants to negotiate a better deal. They want to see something better for their family. They're talking now about, we want to see the president push the idea of showing us what is in those trade agreements that we've been asking to see for so many years. They want to say, why can't somebody mandate that we restore the trades and technology programs in the schools, not only in the few tech schools that are out there, but double or triple the amount of schools that are preparing workers to be part of the real jobs that are needed by industries in America today. And that nobody wants to honor that. So everybody's talking about, we have to negotiate a better deal. And who better to do it than Donald Trump? Because whether he's the president for another 2 years or six or another 6 years after that, he's still going to negotiate deals for the American people. You see what happens when he went to these various countries. What's he talking about? He's talking about America first. Believe it or not, the tourists love it. The tourists tell me that they love that because this is the first person in their lifetime, and many of them are not that old. They say the first person in our lifetime that went around the world talking about America first. Have you seen that, Larkin?
Yeah, it really is kind of embarrassing for us to that degree. There's no question. But, you know, I was trying to explain to my children my position on Trump as president right now. And I essentially, Michael, explained the same thing. I said, listen, what Shane said. It's such a waste of time to stand around and talk about yesterday's issues. Why can't we talk about today's issues? When the next election comes around, if you really don't like Donald Trump, don't let the same outcome happen again. That's the beauty of this country.
That's the beauty of the election process.
And
absolutely.
I wish I could tell you the number of times in my illustrious career that I worked for buffoons as my boss. I mean, guys that didn't even know to come in and out of the rain. And I didn't start this campaign to get them replaced. It was, we were all pulling in the same direction. We were trying to make our company better, stronger, more successful, with a sustainable future. That was the object. And we didn't allow a bad boss or a weak boss or somebody who got in there by mistake to pull us down. But we also didn't spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to get rid of them. We moved forward.
Right. You know, one lady said to me, Donald Trump is the greatest publicity stunt artist America has ever seen. Because she said to me, every moment possible, the news is focusing on something he did, something he said, a tweet that he did. And by the way, before I turn the microphone over to Rich Loges, who has joined us, I want to just mention that we've had some very happy times in the Blihash and the Roth families. My daughter Marion gave birth to a baby boy whose name is Andrew, and I want to congratulate my daughter Marion Blihash Roth and her husband Andrew Roth and their little daughter Gabriella, who simply overjoyed to welcome Andrew to the family. And as the Jaju, the grandfather, I'm really pleased to make this announcement. Just a little something special to add something. Now, there's another part to that. This is another reason that I am pushing all of these things, jobs, job skills, you know, respect for America, fly the flag, because all the young people, Rich Loges' daughter, Isabella, I mean, they have to grow up in a country where respect, employment, job opportunities, and so forth and so on are the key to our success. Not some politician sitting around saying, we want this or we want that. Most of them have never been in a business. They have no idea. Rich, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, good morning. And Larkin, how you doing? Michael, and congratulations, Michael, to you and your family. Very happy to hear that. It sounds like, sorry I was running late, but sounds like I came in at exactly the right moment on what I heard Larkin just say. And, you know, Michael, I've heard all the, you know, all the losing of, the collective losing of minds over Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court with Justice Kennedy's retirement. And I see all these politicians saying how we have to mobilize the American people to defeat this right-wing Supreme Court nominee. Now listen, whether you think he's a right-wing Supreme Court nominee or not, Michael, there's no mobilizing of the American people. That's already been done. The election's already had. And when the election was had, it wasn't just a presidential election, it was an election on the Senate. And the Senate decided, so the Senate has its majority. The thing that's funny, Larkin, to me, and again, sorry to make it partisan, but I just have to call it for what it is. It's funny to me how when Democrats win, elections have consequences, which translates to I won and you lost, I don't need to work with you. But when they lose, We need to change everything about the way we do business. Everything has to be changed, Larkin. We have to change all the rules because now we lost.
Yeah,
I mean we can't sustain that. That's not, the stupidity levels in America are at historic highs, Michael.
Historic.
They are.
It is. It's imbecilic in many cases.
Well, Rich, you missed it earlier. Larkin was talking about a story where some girl, I don't know who, but some girl thought the 4th of July was the end of the Civil War, and that's why we celebrated it as a holiday. So to your point, yes, America is up there for being stupid.
And you know, and Shane, let me tell you about a point, something like that. When I hear the, it's probably a young girl, right? I'm guessing, you know, late teens, early 20s.
I know she was probably college age.
College age. When I hear those stories, Larkin, when I hear them, Now, maybe this is an unfair statement, what I'm about to say. But when I hear those kinds of stories, I want to meet her parents and put their heads through the wall. That's what I want to do, Mike. I'll be honest with you. Who are your parents? I'd like to say, who are your parents sitting right there? Like, bring them over here. Who's first? Which head's going through the wall first? You know, I'm not advocating violence, Shane. Let me just be clear. It's, you know, I'm using a metaphor here. I don't really believe in doing that. That right there is a microcosmic example of how, Shane, we have failed your generation.
Well, that was going to be my next point.
Yes.
That could be one of the future leaders. I mean, if she's a college in college right now, around my age, we're the future of America. Are we really going to trust people like that with your kids, your grandkids, you know, our grandkids, our future in America? We're going to trust it on the shoulders of some of these people like that. It's kind of scary to think about, honestly.
You know, when I saw, Rich, the announcement of justice, the new justice, proposed justice, I saw some of those people entering the room. And believe it or not, I must have seen them many, many years entering the chambers of all these various events and the annual speeches and all that sort of stuff. Is there no one else qualified in some of these states that could be elected to bring a new turn to things in the way America has to go? I don't understand it. Some of these people can barely, you know, think in a modern way, let alone should they be in charge. Should they be the main official from any district or state wide election? I don't understand how this continues to grow. And I saw some of the people, it was like, wow, deja vu from 25 years ago.
Yeah, I wanted to bring something else up. I'm glad you're here, Rich. Welcome. I hope you had a great fourth.
Thank you.
And again, this is kind of partisan, but I just wanted to discuss it because this to me is a perfect example of how awful Congress is right now. We have a Republican senator who you and I like, Rich, and you and I know. His name is Rubio. And he is going to introduce a bill next week in which mandatory leave for maternity will be the law. That's okay. Hey, okay. A lot of countries do that. A lot of, you know, it's done. We wouldn't be movers and shakers with that policy. But he's going to fund it through Social Security. Now, excuse me. But Social Security is broke. They have no money.
And Larkin, you're right, and that's stupid on his part. For a man who wanted to be the president of the United States, I mean, that is ridiculous. The problem with this type of a person is they continue to stay in there and put this kind of stuff. Social Security Trust had money borrowed for other reasons in the past. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely.
And was that money ever repaid?
No, heck no.
So why hasn't that money been identified? Most American people don't know whether it was the Civil War or the Revolution that brought about the Declaration of Independence. I hate to say it, but the thing is, most people don't even know that the Social Security Trust was robbed for many benefits needed to provide in the country over the last 18 or 20 years, and it's never been repaid. When they say Social Security is going to go broke, if they repaid all those dollars into the Social Security fund, it would not go broke.
No, of course not. But to me, how you can be a sitting senator for the last, I don't even know how long he's been in there. Is he in the middle of his second term? And not know that the Social Security system is now arguing about when they're going to run out of money, 2020 or 2030.
Right. Right.
Excuse me. And yet they're going to fund a maternity leave for 6 weeks for every female delivering a baby, which is, I'm not criticizing the objective, I'm criticizing the method.
Now, Larkin, if he was sensible, he could say, well, how about we have this maternity fund to honor our new parents, and let's take it from one penny in taxes for every so many dollars earned that go into that maternity leave fund, like a workers' compensation, but a fund for maternity leave. If he said that, well, then people would stop and think, well, maybe that's something we could do, or something that comes from profits. If less profit tax was paid to the government and the money went into the maternity leave fund, okay, then that's something we can also agree with. But Social Security, you know, the fund, the money from Social Security fund borrowed over the years is enormous, Larkin. It's enormous.
Well, it's just another example of how mismanaged our government is by the elected officials.
And I would like to see the president and all the Congress people start reporting on exactly how much money was borrowed from that Social Security fund and how it's important that we have people work. And as they're working, repay the Social Security fund. Don't start dipping into the new funds because we have a better employment base and start just using it on other line item things.
So that's as cheap a shot as I will take at one of my political gnomes, because I otherwise, you know, don't mind Rubio. I think he's been a pretty decent senator. But between the H-1B and the new maternity leave, I'm not sure he's understanding what the heck's going on a national level. I mean, it really makes me shake my head at times.
Now, Larkin, you brought up something about these special visas for the summer. By the way, a lot less of those visas have been approved this year. And in fact, people, even at the shore points and all, tell me that they've brought in a lot more American workers this year, American college kids, teachers, and people working in the school system that don't work in the summer. They're working at the shore points now. Now, the reason I was told this is happening is the people that were bringing all the kids over from the United, from all these other places, from United Kingdom or Ireland and Poland and all these other countries, they worked 12 months a year to get that program ready so that those kids were ready to get on the plane and be in America at those job sites as soon as possible. And yet in America, a man told me at the shore, a good guy, he says to me, in America, we have to go out and look for the people ourselves. There's nobody in the school system saying, I got 2 and 3 and 4 kids ready to go. Can you bring them into your place at the shore to do the rides or the ice cream cones or whatever? We don't have that. Our people are not thinking ahead of the ball game.
And I don't want to call out specific people, but I've always scratched my head about Long Beach Island and New Jersey. I love the place. I absolutely love it. And we've vacationed there for 20-plus years. But in Beach Haven, there's a great department store, family-owned, grocery store, by the name of Murphy's. And if you go in there in the summertime during beach time, you will discover that probably a half, maybe a little over a half, of the cashiers are Russians, or from the, at least from the Soviet bloc, and they're waiting on the customers, and they, with their broken English, and they're fun to talk to and everything. But I occasionally scratch my head and go, I would love to have had that job while I was late in high school and early in college. I mean, working at the beach, I can't even imagine.
And, you know, Larkin, that's another new business that someone could open, getting students lined up to fill these jobs in various resorts. That could be a job that starts in October, and the boys and girls are already given notification where they're, you know, going to be hired. This is exactly what is being done by the foreign people who are bringing the students to America. We haven't paid attention to our students. Foreigners have been paying attention to their students, and that's why we have so many foreign students here over the summer. Now, I'd ask the question, Rich, maybe you know this. How many American students go to work in foreign countries during the summer months?
It's probably, Michael, so small we don't even register it.
Bingo. That's the way it goes. Yeah, we did this to ourselves, guys. I mean, Shane, you're a perfect example. Have you heard about any programs in your school that where they're welcoming people to go from America overseas to work for the summer?
For work? No, not really. I will say a lot of the people that I see at our school are from other countries, though.
Well, the school I could see,
right,
them coming on the student programs for learning. But I'm talking about for the 3-month summer job program. I don't hear about it.
I haven't heard anything.
But do we get contacts even at the center to welcome somebody from overseas for the summer here? Oh, yeah. But I've never received anybody except local people maybe saying they're going to do some kind of a job program. This is what it is. We paid attention to a lot of nonsense, but our workers were pushed aside because too many agendas came into the picture. Rich, you're down in Florida. Do you see a lot of foreign students down there too? I mean, not foreign, just came over illegally here. I'm talking about those that came for the summer programs.
No, more in education, Michael. It's more in education because despite what many Americans think, you know, many countries that we recognize for the most part overseas to be impoverished third world, there are segments of those countries that are very, very wealthy, and those people send their children to America to get educated. Why? Because no one's fleeing America, right? I mean, are there any, does Mexico have any problem with Americans trying to hop the border, Michael? How about in Canada, right? I'm not picking on Mexico. I'm just saying they're our neighbors. No one's fleeing the United States. There's no problem with the Canadian border with Prime Minister Trudeau saying we need to stop. And so we have that problem. And, of course, we don't ever talk about, well, we on this show do, but the nation as a whole never actually talks about what the root causes of problems are. And people are fleeing those places they live because of the kinds of government that certain politicians in our country are sympathetic to. And so what happens in these other nations, and I've seen it with my own eyes, especially here in Florida, is that from other countries where they don't overall do very well, but economically there are segments that are of high affluence, and their kids come here, Mike.
Yep, I see it all the time. And of course, we're focused on American workers. So I want to see as many young people have the opportunity to be working at all these sites, especially the summer jobs. If you're in college, Shane's in college. He appreciates being here at the center doing his thing. And I'm sure that, you know, others in his category from his school and all the schools should have a counselor that says, are you looking for a summer job? Do you have that to speak of? And Shane?
I haven't really looked into it. I'm sure.
It's every man for himself. Now, there's the thing. If you were a student in school, they should announce that to you. Well, if you're looking for a summer job, you go to this particular counselor's office, this particular floor, and they'll be able to hand you out some flyers of people welcoming.
Michael, let me put it this way. Instead of, I don't know if that's a thing. It might be. I didn't look into it. But instead of even looking into if my school even offered something like that, I instead just went out and did it myself. I contacted you guys. I contacted a bunch of other places looking for jobs. So even if they have any program like that at the school, I don't know. But
But
I was able to get it done by myself.
You did it on your own initiative. That's the way you operate. But unfortunately, a lot of people like to know that there is a resource for them to go to. And that's where I think the schools have messed up quite a bit. You know, years ago, there were unemployment offices. Today, unemployment is done over the phone, over the internet. You don't speak and talk to anyone face to face. It's pretty scary, but that's the way life is. Rich, what else is new?
Michael, I just want to tell you again, I'm so happy for your family, the announcement. I apologize. I've been meaning to privately tell you, but I'll just congratulate you right on air. And so, Shane, I want to mention a point about so for Shane here. So, you know, Shane, I'd like to meet your parents and tell them, you know, that they did a very job well done. And I don't say that to take any credit away from you. I would tell you guys a really funny quick story. Because I always like talking to the youth, and one of my big problems with a lot of my Republican and conservative friends, Michael, is I feel like that they're too willing to turn their backs on the youth and millennials. So last night I had a conversation with a 19-year-old who was driving a Mercedes, talking about how things should be free. So I asked him what my fair share of his Mercedes was, and he said that it wasn't his, it was his parents. And I said, well, how much does it cost? And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, so you want me to entrust you with making policy for my business and educating my children on free stuff when you don't even know how much the bill is? Everybody's for free stuff when they don't need to pay the bill, Mike.
Yep. In fact, I'd love to know if somebody could tell me what is due the Social Security Trust.
Michael, at the end of the conversation with the young guy, because I don't attack the young guy, he said the music to my ear, Shane. He looked at me and said, you know, I never really thought about it that way.
You know, Rich, that's a very good ending to the story. And that's what is the problem all over the USA.
Well, and hopefully he didn't just dismiss that conversation and throw it in the waste bin. Hopefully he's still thinking about it. And
hopefully so. You're right. Hopefully so. Absolutely.
Yeah, many conversations that I have with people, I remember them very well. I hope, Rich, you left an impression on this guy. And on our listeners as well. Time for all of the people listening to ask their children and grandchildren what the cost of life is all about so they know for the future. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. You'll get a copy of today's broadcast. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, my best wishes to you and yours. Have a great one. Stay cool.
Thank you, everyone.